So this is, what is this, number three? Yeah, this is the third one. It is May 22nd, 2012. And this is the Brothers Wisp. Unfortunately, Andrew Cox stayed up all night playing Diablo 3 and just went to sleep not too long ago. So unfortunately, we won't have him tonight, but we still have JJ Boyd and the masterful Justin Wilson.
Woohoo!
Who you can't see because he's on a Mac, which is unfortunate. Macs are very computer-like. Unfortunately, they just never seem to function properly.
Almost built-in webcams and stuff.
Yeah, Skype's not very supportive of it, though.
Well, Skype was bought by Microsoft not too long ago, so...
Conspiracy, man.
I'm telling you, dude. Although, supposedly, they run a lot of Linux in their infrastructure.
Why would they do that? I mean, they have a superior product, I've heard.
I don't know. I guess that's what it was developed on, so that's what they're sticking with. I'm sure that has everything to do with it.
They probably can't understand the licensing.
Buzzing. All right, man. So let's see. On this one, I had a question from a guy who was asking about kind of in general securing your Wisp, kind of what do you do? And then another one was kind of a brain teaser from Mike by way of Justin. And then let's see, what else has happened? It's been a couple months since our last one, and that's entirely my fault. I was recertifying some stuff, and so I was just basically turned off my life and studied for that for a couple months and finally came on the other side of that, which is good because I was about to go crazy. And
and you passed and everything?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Of course.
I figured so. We got to let everybody know that, though.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
So I'm just recertifying my CCNP.
Cool.
So like I try to tell everybody, if you have any questions, ask me now before it all falls out of my head because it's already starting to. So I was really, really glad to be done with that for a little while. Let's see. And so that's what I've been doing. JJ has... Have you taken one plane trip so far?
Yeah, I've been... I went out to Seattle last week. I don't remember what week it was. Helped some guys with some Microtik stuff, and... They're deploying the stuff. They've got like a monitoring. I'm trying to figure out how to explain what they do. They've got this system that they monitor heating, like condensing units on the roofs of like large malls and things like that, and it allows them to pull telemetry from all of these heating units.
Sounds like a SCADA system.
Yeah, but. No, like it's their own proprietary thing, and they're using all Microtik radios and routers. Then they kind of take a 750 access point and like an OmniTik, and then they also have like a Sierra wireless modem inside this enclosure. Weird. So they have 3G going into the roof, and then they make their own wireless LAN on the roof to talk to 50 or so. Rooftop units, and they control fan speeds, and then they also have like a web login for the operators of this stuff, and they can control all the fan speeds, and it's supposed to really save the operators of this super duper HVAC equipment a lot of money on electricity.
Yeah, so, that sounds like a SCADA system to me, brother.
No.
It's data access and control. That's pretty much what that is. So what have you been doing, Justin? What's new with you, brother?
We had a dispute on one of my WISPs. We had a dispute with a town. We were on a water tower, and we went from having no tower to a 140-foot stacked tower in 3 days with no concrete. So if that,
how does that work?
We actually had a company come out and drill auger. Imagine a big auger they use for power companies. We have three of those holding the guy wires in, and then one holding the plate in. There's not a lick of concrete in the whole 140-foot tower.
It's just a big auger that screws in?
Yep, yep.
That sounds like whenever you tie down a trailer house. You auger those babies down and you... Not that I know anything about that.
Yeah, there's probably about... It's 10 foot in total. Probably about 5 foot of its shaft, and then the rest is the screw auger. You know, we were able to, you know, go pick up the tower one day, had the drilling company come out the next day, and we were stacking tower the third day.
Very nice.
That's cool.
That's been my
excitement. We just cut down trees and build a small tower.
So. You just put up a little pole, don't you?
Yeah, a little pole and cut all the trees down.
Well, everything JJ does is on the side of a mountain, so it's not such a big deal.
Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't.
I got another trip coming up Friday, and I hope to be able to talk more about it.
Yeah, your super secret squirrel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. That's cool. Well, I'm not going to press you. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Right.
As long as you bring me on the next trip, obviously.
Right. Right. Well, we'll see. I want to get out my list and see. I like this person and this person and this person.
So speaking of trips, cool. I know you guys have confirmed for the MUM, right?
Justin, yes.
And JJ has, and I'm definitely going to be there. And Justin's actually giving a presentation where he's giving away free cookies, which is going to be awesome.
Yep, cookies.
And then I'm going to be doing one on BGP. What's yours going to be on, JJ?
I don't know. Probably not going to do one. I like watching you guys too much.
Is that right? Well, on my blog, I put up the idea of it would be cool to do kind of a round table. And I was thinking, you know, us, you know, four idiots or three idiots, I guess, depending on how many idiots
we can gather. We could Skype him in.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That would be hilarious, just him on Skype with the laptop sitting there. You can put, like, a jacket around it so it's like a real person.
There you go.
It has to be, like, a 12-year-old boy's jacket. It's got to be super skinny. That way, you know, it's life-size for him. Norma said that is something that they occasionally do. So I was thinking, well, you know, maybe even kind of a sanctioned thing. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool to have, you know, those guys come in, you know, even for a couple minutes and, you know, field some questions or something.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, it's, you know, just like the however many of us we have sitting at a table, people coming up and firing questions really fast and just throwing stuff out there. Not actually doing anything, but just talking about it. That's totally cool with me.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I was thinking that was cool. Or maybe if we do it kind of unsanctioned at some place where they just feed you guys beers, and we'll see how accurate your answers get as time progresses.
See how long we last.
Yeah, it'd be pretty good. It'd be pretty good, I think.
I think it would become, you know, a couple of bumbling idiots talking about the prophecies of wireless or something.
Yeah,
we could come up with a drinking game out of it.
I think if we're gonna do it that way and we're going for weird, we got to get Sam in there too.
Yeah,
yeah,
that'll get real weird real quick. I think that'd be great.
Right.
Cool,
for
man.
Sure. Right. He could do an Arduino segment.
Probably. I have no doubt that Sam could give a segment on just about anything. And you may or may not want to hear his answers. Who knows? So let's get started on the security one. Shut the door, buddy. Starting out, the guy was just asking on general security. He didn't really say specifically one way or the other, what he was exactly talking about, which I think is kind of good. It kind of leaves it open, and in general, we can kind of hit a few things. So I made some quick notes, and you guys just kind of interject and jump in. And I was going to start kind of at the internet border and work my way back. So securing the border router, obviously, is that's your entry point into the internet. That's going to be your most vulnerable spot, I would think. Although it seems like most attacks nowadays seem to be coming from the inside when people's machines get compromised. But securing the border router, so the router itself, Step one, disable unused services. First thing I always do when I'm configuring a router is go to IP services, turn everything off but Winbox, and then lock down administrative access. Make sure only your admins can get in. You know, if you have a specific subnet or you want to have a VPN account that you have to VPN into, and then go from there. And then also some reflexive firewall rules. So, you know, if you're getting port scanned, you can block people. You know, be sure to tar pit people because it really annoys them.
Yep.
I have kind of a basic firewall rule set, and if people seem interested, I'll go ahead and post it up. Because I don't usually charge for it. I just charge for the time I do to install it. And if you guys just want to copy and paste and save yourself a couple of bones, I'm all for that. But what I do in there is, you know, if people seem to be scamming or doing anything I don't like, I tar pit them. And so I ended up sticking this on a customer one time, and they have this PCI compliance they have to deal with. So your IP address gets scanned by an outside source. And the scan took 10.5 hours, where it normally takes about 45 minutes for the company. And then they failed the scan because they said every single TCP port was open. Because basically what it does is once you get identified as a scan, it just sucks in everything and holds it open. So it literally it literally crashed their script multiple times when they were trying to scan the company. So to me, that's a pass. It passed.
Yeah,
but
that is
a pass. Since the report technically said every single TCP port was open, it failed.
That's terrible. I also find it necessary for the forward traffic I get a lot of attacks on any open port 22, specifically coming out of China mostly.
Yeah.
So we run that that script to you know, if you open so many connections on port 22 in a certain amount of time, you know, it adds it to an ACL that just gets dropped or tar pitted or however you want to set it up. So,
you know what's crazy is I've seen lately I've been seeing like SSH attacks coming at the it's interesting because they come one every like minute on the dot or one every 5 minutes, I can't remember, but it's it'll one break-in attempt and then it'll wait 5 minutes, then one more break-in attempt. You know, it's like at this rate, it'll take, you know, until, you know, the internet version 10 is out before they actually break in. It's just ridiculous.
What is the point? I guess they're just doing it in such a sheer volume that they figure they'll get one every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, maybe on the off chance that somebody will have, you know, root and password set up or something.
Yeah. And I've seen kind of a variation of, you know, some botnets where, you know, I'll see the same attack, you know, every minute or so from 10 different IPs. So you got 10 attacks a minute, but they're all from different IPs. And I've noticed if one stops, they all stop. So someone's found that botnet and kind of stopped it.
Yeah, yeah. So you were talking about attacks coming from China. There used to be this site called countryipblocks.net, and you could go in there and you could like enter in you know, or select from this little list box all the different countries, and it would spit out all of their CIDR blocks associated with them, and then you could just create an ACL to block specific countries. And I've done that for certain people, you know, like block Brazil, a lot of attacks come out of South America. I'd block China, you know, a lot of that stuff, because if you're say you're a WISP in Ohio, there's not a whole lot of people from China that are going to be, you know, attempting to log into your router, or really should be. So it's kind of easy to do some stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be I used to do that on a lot of the Cisco routers I managed, but I kind of lost track of anywhere that keeps track of those. NANOG does a little, but I haven't been able to find anybody that you know, keeps a pretty up to date list, which shouldn't be that big of a deal anymore since you know, all the IPs are allocated now.
Yeah, it looks like countryipblocks.net now is a pay service. Looks like it's not free anymore. Such is life. But I bet there's something similar to it out there. So also, at your border router, say on your towers or some devices like that that's part of your private infrastructure, you've got public IPs at the border router. You can block external access coming in them. You know, it's another good safe bet to do right there on the border router. Securing towers is going to be another key piece, I think. One you're
before
gonna
we
wanna...
go that far, Greg, what's your thought on BGP, like MD5, authentication and things like that? Is it really a big deal or not?
You know what? The MD5 authentication on BGP is not such a big one. But to me, any built-in security feature, I usually enable it. You know, so all of my BGP peers have MD5 authentication. Even if the password's not that complex, I still, you know, put it on there. My OSPF instances, I always put authentication on there too.
So do I. Yes, so do I.
And really, that's primarily to protect the network from myself, because
yes.
I have a tendency to use my own network as my lab, even though I know I shouldn't. And I'm not saying it's happened, but I'm saying there's the possibility that maybe I put something on my network when I was labbing, and it picked up the OSPF process and black hole stuff. Stuff happens, you know? So
yeah.
If you have that authentication on there, and then you just happen to be farting around on this router, and you plug it in your instance, it's not going to just pick up and go, you know? If you have somebody, you know, like physically trying to jump into your OSPF domain, yeah, I think you got bigger problems.
Well, and it kind of helps. I've ran across this issue. One of the companies I'm involved with, we sell bandwidth to several other WISPs.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, in several spots, we're not doing BGP. We're just doing static routes to these WISPs. There's no, you know, real exchanges. And the OSPF authentication protects both parties from interjecting routes. You know, I had a problem several years ago. We were buying bandwidth from another neighboring WISP, and we didn't run MD5 authentication, and we turned up a new link with them, and all of a sudden we received all their routes.
Yeah.
Well, there was a fair amount of overlapping IP space, and we had to reboot a lot of routers to clear caches and stuff like that.
Stuff got hairy really quick. Yeah, and I know, especially when it comes to BGP, for me, before I ever turn up a peer, I have filter lists. I mean, that's critical. So whether I'm pulling IP from an ISP or I'm handing it off to a customer, there's filter lists, both inbound and outbound, that specifically says what I'm going to accept and what I'm going to send. I never just wholly take anything from anybody. You know, I'm too paranoid. I can't trust anybody, especially like in a data center environment where it's 100% SLA. You just can't take chances. You know,
true.
I absolutely can't. I can't leave anything open for anybody to exploit in any way, shape, or form. I got to try and lock it down as much as you can. I don't. Anywhere actually peer via OSPF with any of our customers. If I'm going to do a dynamic protocol, it's only BGP. That's all I ever do with anybody. Just because I feel like you have a little bit more control. It moves a little bit slower, you know? Like OSPF, by default, let's see if I can remember, the hello interval is, I think, 15 seconds. Is that right? I think it's 15 seconds, and it's 4 times that? No. 30. 4 times 3. I think it's 30 seconds?
I know router dead is 40. So.
Yeah, I can't even remember. I just took the test like 3 weeks ago, and I can't even remember now. But anyway, so it reacts relatively quick. It moves quick. The default for BGP is a keep alive every 60 seconds and 3 times the fail. So it moves a lot slower. You know, if somebody's link is flapping, BGP will dampen, you know, whereas OSPF will just kind of dance a jig up and down, and things will get unpredictable, you know. So and also OSPF, pretty much all I carry in there is a default route and my interconnecting links between my sites. I don't really carry kind of real routes on there. So things just kind of, with BGP, stay a little bit more stable, smooth out a little bit. Plus, it gives the customer a lot of control on what they want to send to me, what they don't, what they want to receive. So the burden's not always wholly on me for that stuff. And actually, my presentation at the MUM is about multi-home BGP. A lot of people are starting to move to the point where, you know, they have two providers they're doing BGP with, but they're not really sure exactly how to configure everything, how do you do the rest of your infrastructure. So I'm just going to kind of do a quick 30-minute presentation that encompasses, 95% of people out there and how that works and how to configure it with all the code and stuff like that. But let's see. Securing towers. And this guy is probably going to be someplace you're going to be a lot better at. Most of the towers now are going to be routed for most people, so you're going to have routers out there, and I would think the pretty much the same rules apply as the board router. You know, protect the router, make sure only your management subnets can actually log into it. But then out at your towers, they should already be protected from people trying to come in from the internet. So you're going to, again, disable unused services, lock down administrative access, and if you can, prevent any client subnets from connecting into the router. Now, Justin wrote a little post not too long ago, and I'll link to that, about to encrypt or not to encrypt, I think is what you call it.
Yeah. Okay.
And so how do you feel about encrypting your backhauls?
I'll do mine, and then JJ can, I don't know, JJ's thoughts on this. My philosophy is the internet, none of the internet links out there are encrypted. So why, if I can keep customers off of my network, whether they be a customer that hasn't paid, or if they just, some customer that got a hold of a unit, if I can keep those types of customers off my network via some other mechanism, whether it be a walled garden type of setup or something like that, I shouldn't have to encrypt my data, because the customer should have the expectation that the data that they're sending isn't encrypted. If they're doing online banking or something like that, it's encrypted without the ISP doing anything. If you're using Google Mail, you're using some sort of SSL authentication, so your password's protected that way.
Did we just lose it?
You still there, Justin?
Terrible, Max.
Ugh. Can you hear me now?
I got you, brother. Yeah. There you are.
Okay. I was talking all wild and hit my mute button.
That's generally how I hold a conversation like this.
So, I have no control over what some guy's going to do, say, three hops up. So if I'm encrypting my network, by the time it hits my upstream provider, why should I really, worry about encryption? I mean, those are kind of my general thoughts on
that. That's really valid. And, I can't think of anything that anybody does that's considered secure that's going to be plain text. Even remote administration, I don't know anybody that really uses Telnet anymore. You've got SSH, and even Winbox will encrypt itself. So I was thinking, if you're telnetting to your infrastructure and you encrypt your backhauls, that keeps somebody from seeing your passwords plain text. But I don't really know anybody that just does everything plain text anymore.
No, we don't encrypt any of our backhauls. We certainly don't encrypt the APs. We have other mechanisms in place to to keep authentication in check. We just do it in layers. We kind of start with the attitude of, okay, well, we're very vendor specific. We've got some Canopy, we've got some Ubiquiti, and then we've got some SkyPilot stuff on the network still. And all three of those, especially the SkyPilot, it's so proprietary. If somebody wants to go pay $600-$700 for some, hokey CPE and point it towards the network. You know, go ahead. You know, that's layer one. And then, you know, we've got different layers beyond there. Like with Ubiquiti, we do AirMax, you know, MicroTickets, NV2. We always have some protocol. So you're not going to just go buy like an alpha, you know, Wi-Fi card and point it towards the tower
and then even on top of that, if you're running, you know, smaller channels, even if somebody does have that equipment and they just do a scan, they're not going to see you unless they configure down to that same channel with your and then do a scan.
Exactly. We run offset channels. Like, we don't run on the center frequencies so we wouldn't even show up on a scan for like a laptop or something anyway. We're kind of in between the standard frequencies. And then another thing that we're doing is some places, you know, we have to run all the way down to 10 megahertz because our backhauls are so long. You can't do it with 20 meg. You can do some of the NV2 or point-to-point NOAC if you're running Ubiquiti, but both of those things at long distances just aren't all they're cracked up to be. I find that dropping down to 10 megs is your best bet.
And I think the customer's attitude has kind of changed over the past couple years. You know, the customer now doesn't really care what delivery method they get their internet from, you know, as long as they get their internet. You know, several years ago, I know at least our local, you know, news channels were going around, oh, Wi-Fi is bad because you got all these open Wi-Fi hotspots. Well, I think people have kind of been educated on that a little, and they say, okay, you know, our most WISPs, at least the majority of customers think, okay, most WISPs are not Wi-Fi. You know, they've kind of, you know, they know, okay, you're not, you know, just some Linksys access point that you put up there. This is something that's a step above.
Yeah. I guess, what's another thing encryption, cuts out is, like man in the middle attacks, I guess, unless they have your encryption key. But really, who's going to be, standing on top of a building with, you know, a 900 megahertz radio, you know, with a 5 megahertz channel, blasting my SSID to try and man in the middle? So nobody's going to do that. You know, that's just ridiculous. So,
well, if you man in the middle it, I mean, what's to stop you from running some of the other brute forcing tools, especially if you're running WEP and WPA, you know, just a couple hours and it's yours. Encryption or not, if someone's dedicated enough.
I mean, if the government wants your information, they have it. It's not a big deal.
It goes straight to their servers anyway. Are you kidding?
I'm pretty sure it does. And then, you know, us as WISPs, we have CALEA compliance. So if we get a court order from the FBI, we're dumping everything from you to them anyway. But you know what? If I really wanted your traffic, I would probably just get a thumb drive and put a Trojan on it and drop it in your driveway, and I'm willing to bet you're going to take that thing in your house and you stick it in your PC.
Yeah, you're going to see what it's all about.
It's not that big a deal. I'm not saying I've done that, but I'm not saying I haven't done it. Never mind. I'm not going to even say who in theory it might have happened to. But another popular method is cheap iPods. People will 100% stick a cheap iPod in their laptop or in their anything, so you're guaranteed kill on that one. So I'm kind of jumping the gun on that, but securing clients like CPEs, that's going to be kind of, I guess, really sort of the last step in the chain. So protect the clients. Don't let the client log into your radio. That'd probably be a good idea.
Yep.
Don't tell them how. Most likely, they won't even bother trying to. They don't care as long as it works, you know. Disable unused services, same old rigmarole. Lock down administrative access and clients to towers. We've already talked about encryption. And,
we do some IP tables rules in our CPEs to, like, we run PPPoE, so we only allow PPPoE traffic to come out of that wireless LAN interface, and then our management VLAN. But we're still rolling the management VLANs out on the Ubiquiti stuff because it's still a little unfinished.
Mm. And so, kind of a to keep a client from touching your infrastructure is on the access point, you can do client isolation so that when they connect in, they can't hit any other customers. And from that point on, they should be in your router. And in your router, you can have ACLs, you know, it's access lists that prevent, you know, one customer from talking to another customer. So basically, you can prevent them from hitting anything in your infrastructure and only go to the internet. So in that effect, you don't even give them the opportunity to touch any of your infrastructure.
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we do a couple things. One is all the infrastructure, the APs and things like that, are on separate IP subnets. And they're also on separate VLANs. So we get kind of a double thing there, because what I see a lot of times is the WISP gets, I don't want to say lazy, but you know, they say, hey, I got an installer out in the field, I don't have enough manpower, so I'm going to set up my network where the installer can log directly into the AP. Well, if the installer can do that, then so can the customer.
Yeah.
So, you know, one method to get around that is, you know, hey, if the customer has internet, make the installer plug their laptop in and initiate a VPN connection. You know, once they're on the VPN, then they can talk to the APs. Sure, it might be, you know, a couple extra minutes, but it's going to really protect your network from the customer. Because, you know, I don't really see malicious customers out there this much, but you know, you guys probably see the customer that is the gamer customer. Hey man, I'm trying to get the best I can out of my connection, so I'm going to see, well, what's my ISP running for hardware. So I'm going to probe them and, you know, do Google searches on it and, you know, try to figure out, okay, what can I tell them to make my gaming experience better?
Yeah, that sounds like JJ right there.
I would never.
Yeah, never. And that, I mean, that's certainly true. And I've seen people do port knocks too, kind of like, which is sort of like poor man's VPN. So if you just hit a series of ports, then it'll kind of unlock the radio for, you know, an hour. That way you can get in there and configure things.
I like the way Andrew Portnox, he just opens up Google and says, :40:40:70:40:30:30, and then bam, there you go.
Yeah. Another way I Portnox sometimes is to hit the, from a browser, hit the IP of your radio or your router, and then /, in a special URL, like unlikemyradio.html. And you just have an L7 looking for somebody trying to do a get on, you know, unlikemyradio.html, and then it'll open up, even though it's not a real page that exists.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that's really good for people that say they have an IP camera set up, you know, and they want to just be able to log in via their iPhone or whatever. And then you say, okay, we'll just hit the shortcut first and then go to this next link. And it'll just port knock, and then bam, they're right in looking at their cameras.
Very nice. Speaking of mobile devices and going back to the installer thing, when we're out installing, or if we got someone out, they have VPN credentials, and then as soon as, you know, they're deployed with that radio, they know what IP address it's going to be on before they get there. They can use their phone through the VPN to bring that radio up as soon as they get it locked onto the asset and tweak it, you know, from the top of a ladder with their smartphone or whatever, so they know exactly what the signal is, as opposed to, you know, saying, oh, it's got 3 lots, that's good, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So kind of the last thing in my, well, pretty much the last thing, is securing your administrative machines. I can't tell you how important this really is. Case in point, an ISP I've done some work for, called me a little while ago and said, hey, we got hacked. One of the machines that we have dude loaded on is also the secretary's machine, and she was surfing, got some nasty virus. Well, the people Trojaned into that dude machine, somehow they knew what the dude was, and they started connecting to their APs.
Oh, no.
And they wreaked havoc. I mean, these guys, like, they were describing problems inside the routers that I didn't even think was possible for things to happen. And it took a little digging and all that kind of stuff, and they had, like, 6-to-4 tunnel going through IPv6 so that they could help hide stuff, and then they were popping back out. And I mean, it was a mess. They basically had to just completely wipe everything. I mean, like, they had, like, these BitLocker hard drives that got corrupted. These guys were, like, jacking them up so much, and so they basically lost everything. They had to wipe everything clean. They had to shut down, like, all of their routed infrastructure and then bring them up one at a time and resetting them and then loading them back. So it's... lock down your administrative machine. If you can, put it on a machine that doesn't have anything but dude access. You know, don't log in there. Don't browse the web from it. Don't do crap like that. It's just your
admin
machine.
I run it on a VM, and that's all it does.
Exactly.
On that VM. It is the dude. I was running it on my core router because it's an x86 machine, mm-hmm. and then the more I did that, the less I was impressed with that because... you know, the dude sometimes does strange things and needs to be rebooted.
Yeah.
And I don't want to reboot my core router just to, to restart the dude. So
my recommendation is run it on a machine that you RDP into, that your remote desktop into. Run the dude from there, or you know, just connect remotely through the dude's remote connection interface. Don't log in and browse and mess around. And
speaking of the dude, you got any information on what's up with updates or releases? Or seems like it's kind of a back burner project.
Seems like it's kind of stagnated a little bit. Yeah. Honestly, I haven't heard anything about it.
I got on their forum and started doing some reading, and a lot of people or one person in particular that was pretty vocal about it was begging them to open source it. So I think that would be kind of a neat avenue for them to go with that. So I mean, it's already free. Why not?
Yeah. They're probably afraid that somebody else would grab it and jazz it up, make it prettier, and then put it back out there.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they could kind of go the approach like other vendors do, you know, keep certain core bits of it, you know, compiled in the SDK and just give other parts that maybe they're not that interested in working on. So... let you know, leverage the power of the community to fix your product. So, for free. Why not?
I don't know. Maybe all the comments are in Latvian or something. It would just be too cumbersome to try and dig your way back out of there.
That would be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think most developers work in English. So.
Yeah.
And before we get off the topic of security, one of the things I see a lot of, and because this isn't by default on most APs, is client isolation. Ubiquity by default, client isolation is not on. That prevents client A on the same AP from talking to client B. You know, they have to go through, you know, the AP and the router to talk to each other.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much the de facto best practice right there. And then in the router, you just keep clients from talking to each other, and everybody's happy.
There's one of the, you know, like you were talking about Kalia earlier, I've actually had an instance where the Kalia warrant came in, you know, the men in black show up at the doorstep and say, hey, you got two bad guys out there. Here they are. Oh, they're on the same AP. They're not talking internet traffic. They're talking amongst themselves.
Oof.
So, you know, they were, you know, doing nasty stuff. So we had to go in and, you know, capture that traffic. And it was on a network where client isolation was not enabled, and they're just talking to each other directly through the AP.
Interesting.
Yeah. It'd be kind of suspicious to go out there and plug a magic box off of their AP and just walk away. I'm sure they would never notice. Yeah. They'd kind of stick out, you climbing on their house.
Yeah.
Network upgrades, right?
Yeah, I did see some where somebody commercialized one of these little it basically looks like a wall wart, but it's got an Ethernet jack, and it's like an automatic back door into somebody's network. You just throw it in, you jam that in, and it sniffs the network and pulls an IP, and then allows you to
tunnels out. Yeah, it creates a little. I've seen one of those.
And then I saw where the government commissioned some security agency to do something similar, and they used pogo plugs. It took pogo plugs and then just loaded a Linux on there and just made them basically like an attack, like a little just an attack, you know, this big, and you just hide it in somebody's network and it goes to town.
Sam and I were talking the other day. We wonder how many pallets of, say, Cisco routers get shipped to places like Iran and wherever that have modified firmware on them that just, you know, reflects all that traffic to some NSA server or what have you.
I don't know. There's a lot of restrictions, especially on Cisco, because there's certain encryption algorithms that you can't export to other countries. And
remember the days of
a lot of those are part of
Netscape,
that.
Where you had to sign the waiver that you weren't going to, you know, take the 120-bit, 8-bit browser out of the country.
That's way before my time.
Oh, okay, I'm pretty then. Yeah, I remember in Netscape version 2, you actually had to sign a paper if you downloaded it, and you're supposed to send the paper back within so many days that said, you know, you were downloading the U.S.-only version and you weren't going to give it to, you know, anybody outside the country.
Wacky, man. Yeah, Cisco's the same way. Whenever you're downloading iOS that has security encryption built in, they make you pretty much hit a checkbox that says, I won't take it to these other countries. You know, where I'm
well, I was talking about, like, the little home routers, like, you know, just the little, E4000s or what have you. Just the, you know, you go into Best Buy and buy a router, and, you know, Habib goes in and gets himself a new router, and lo and behold, it's popping all of his, material back.
You know, you say governments capturing information. There was some website I saw a little while back, and I actually printed the forms. I haven't done anything with them, but you can request from all the different government agencies information about you, like your folder, your portfolio, and gives you. I mean, everything's ready to go. You just have to put in like a couple bucks or something. I think it's pretty cheap, and then mail that off, and you never know if they've been following you or anything. But I was thinking, I know for sure the government watches me, because I get random emails from all over the world all the time. Like, once a month I'll get something from Iran, you know, like, hey, can you help me with this? I actually got one from Iran saying, hey, there's this firewall that the country has in place, and I need a way to tunnel through it to backdoor. And I was like, I'm not touching this. I just deleted that one. I was like, no way am I coming anywhere near that. But, yeah, I mean, you know they're watching us all. They got a nice little folder.
Yeah.
On everybody.
I used to work for an unnamed university, and Homeland Security came in one day and put in, I mean, literally it was a black rack. You can't see in it, nothing. And they put in this rack in one of the data centers, and no one knew what it did. They just put it in.
That's crazy. So you know...
It was Facebook. That was...
But you know all the social networks and all the search engines have, you know, a backdoor government tap on them. So, you know, I have no problem. I got nothing to hide. I'm boring. You know, what's the point?
That's what,
yeah, I'm as boring as the next person. So.
That's what a 4024, whatever it is, bit ciphers for on PGP.
I don't know, because I remember reading how, golly, for a couple, it's probably a year ago, 2 years ago, for, I think it was for like a 15-minute span, like something like 10% of the world's internet traffic accidentally shifted through China and
yes.
Routed through China. And I think it was like all of the .gov domains, like I think Facebook and then some of the major search engines, maybe Microsoft.com, like everything. Just, but you know that was ample time for them to do a capture and then go back and get to cracking, you know. So.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was accidental, purely accidental.
Yep.
Stuff happens. So that's the security part. One thing I remember now that I'm thinking about it, is because I wanted to talk about this before we moved on, because I know I'll forget, is JJ put up a little post not too long ago about Ubiquiti's 5 gigahertz UN to FCC approval, right?
Yes. They announced in Chicago that they were going to be releasing firmware to open up the UNI 2 band in the United States. Originally, whenever Ubiquiti sold their hardware, you know, you had, you know, a lot of these frequencies, and they started backing off. You know, all these firmware updates removed frequencies from the list because they were basically non-compliant. They didn't have their DFS code straightened out, their radar avoidance stuff. So the FCC got on them. I think it all started with a company out of Utah Broadband or something. They were using basically, you know, 4.9 gig, 5 gig, specifically TDWR, I think 5620 to 5640, or they were next to a major airport that had wind shear radar, and they got a lot of trouble. And then so the FCC, I think, came down on Ubiquiti, and then they locked out these frequencies. But they recertified the devices with the DFS, so it's going to open up the UNI 2 band again. And what you have to do is you have to go to Ubiquiti's website and go to this, I think it's ubiquiti.com, I don't know the URL, /
something. We'll post it the link.
And they... you fill it out, you tell them how many units you got of what types, and this is only pertaining to 5 gigahertz equipment, and they send you stickers. You basically got to put new stickers on all your hardware, no matter if it's 1,000 foot in the air, it's got to have a new sticker put on it. Then you get a unique code for version 5.5.1 that's unique to your company that you paste into their firmware. And then it unlocks these frequencies for use on your hardware, on U.S.-based hardware. So that's kind of the, you know, the down on all of that.
And some guys out there may ask, well, what good's the sticker going to do me? Why do I have to have the sticker? And, you know, I had a discussion the other day. It's very important, especially if you're on commercial towers. You know, especially the big boys, American Tower, guys like that. If there's ever a question, you know, they're going to say, hey, you didn't have the proper sticker on your stuff. You know, if you follow the letter of the law, you're not compliant. So, you know, even if you're running proper firmware and everything, they could still give you an issue, you know, administratively and legally. Just because you didn't have the right sticker on there.
So, I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be, you know, people that go out and get their little code and pop it all over their radios and open up those frequencies. But all of our major deployments that we're actually going to attempt to use new frequencies on, we will definitely revisit that. I'm kind of just thinking, you know, it's running pretty good right now. When the newer rocket, the Titaniums, come out, we're seriously looking at it, especially the places where we're co-located with FM towers. We get a lot of interference on our radios coming from that, these high-power FM stations. So, especially the television station that we're co-located with, it's tough. So.
Cool. So, that's the UNI 2 FCC approval. Let's see what else. I guess we can move on to kind of that brain teaser that Mike came up with. And I guess Justin, you'd probably be able to relay kind of exactly what he was looking for better than I could.
He's kind of looking for, say, you have a hotspot in a, you know, a mall or some, you know, something that's a step up from your normal business, something that's critical, but it's a critical hotspot, so to speak. And you you know, you may have a DSL connection in there, and maybe that DSL connection can't keep up with, you know, what the bandwidth requirements are at certain times. Maybe it doesn't justify, you know, a full-blown, you know, beefy connection. Maybe, you know, an hour a day or something, it peaks out. And so he's wondering, how do you combine multiple connections and kind of bond them together and make them work good? You know, whether it be a DSL coupled with, say, a 3G connection, coupled with, you know, whatever.
Looping and swooping.
Looping and swooping. So... let's see. If you want to just do failover routing, that's pretty standard, pretty straightforward. That's easy one. You know, it's you pick whichever one's the preferred better option. You give the default route there, and then you just have like another static route that with a higher administrative distance. That way, if one falls off, the other one picks up, takes over.
Yep.
If you actually want to bond them together, that's going to get a little funkier. For one, if you're doing DSL and 3G. The delay is going to be very significant between the two. So if you're trying to do like actual load balancing between the two, you're going to get a whole lot of jitter, you know, because the DSL.
You could do route marks and say all this stuff goes this way and all this stuff goes this way, and then in the event that they fail, and then if you really want to bond them, you have to like what I do, a VPN into or EOIP tunnel into our core infrastructure. So I can have those same IP addresses come through. That way, all the traffic is generated from the same IP address. Because a lot of servers that you connect to, you know, let's say packets 1, 2, 3 go through this one, and 4, 5, 6 go through this one, you know, this WAN port. Then the server's like, I don't know, you go away. You know, I'm not talking to you. You know, that traffic was destined for this source address or this. So I found. Routing marks help me with that situation, and because I have a lot of wackiness that I have to deal with, and trying to make the impossible possible. So specifically, I've got a situation where I need to route large, but you know, /27s over to some people. Well, on a residential connection, that's just not gonna happen, especially through Charter. So I found that I could tunnel them in and then route them traffic from the data center. You know, you're basically paying for the throughput twice if you do that. But in this case, it's still cheaper in the situation I'm in than paying Charter for a commercial account and then per IP. So, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
One thing I've heard. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of really the only option to do it. If you're trying to route somebody some addressing like that, you got to tunnel through and do all that crazy loop and swoop. In this specific scenario, if you wanted to, say you wanted to, you know, you have multiple connections and you want them to look like one big fat connection, another thing you can do is create three tunnels, one from each of the providers back to a central point. So if you've got a data center somewhere, you could have a tunnel running between the each one of those three tunnels. And then on those tunnels here, you can bond them together so that, and then say choose round robin. That way, you know, the first connection will shoot out here, second, third. So that way if somebody does a speed test, it will look closer to the aggregate speed. You know what I mean?
And you'll be NATing from behind one address.
Yeah, because it can all stay just that client private all the way through the tunnel. When it pops out at the data center, then you know it can go ahead and NAT to that public there. There'd be another way you could kind of make it look like it's one big fat connection. They do make specific appliances that take, you know, several connections together and kind of do the fake muxing in there, especially with like HTTP traffic. But if you're trying to do it in a MikroTik, I think the bonding method is the only way. And Andrew and I, which is unfortunate that he's not here, we had this exact same discussion a while back about how to kind of do that with, say, some 3G sort of stuff.
I've been playing with that NetWatch script for fell over the last couple of weeks. I've had several instances where I needed to use it. And but who am I to say that my core router is the death of the internet, or just because PPPoE drops on their DSL connection or whatever the situation is? You know, it needs to be something that's pertinent to that customer. You know, I've got this one customer. If this one server goes down somewhere in Arizona, their internet, you know, for their, as far as they're concerned, is down.
Multiple
WAN connections, one's DSL and one is us. And so I needed a way to, you know, if the data center that we purchased bandwidth from couldn't resolve that IP address, then check over here instead, you know, with their other WAN provider, and then fail, you know, do cost adjustment on the routes with that script. So it's pretty slick stuff.
That's cool.
What is this? Yeah, I read this, Justin. Justin sent a link.
It's using PCC. I actually have one provider I'm using this with, and here's a question for you guys. One of the things we do with them, and we haven't had any complaints on any other protocols, is, you know, we mark HTTPS and always send the HTTPS traffic out, you know, a single provider. That way, if you're doing some sort of round robin, you know, you don't get kickbacks from, you know, security concerns and things like that. Have you guys seen any other protocols that it doesn't like being switched between multiple IPs?
Yeah, anything that's going to establish a session. Some stuff that's it's cookie-based that locks in by IP address. I've seen that before.
I've been using like routing marks to accomplish that.
Yeah.
So that
usually what I do is, you know, it's like a source to a destination. You know, go ahead and lock that into one and then send them out there. Or if you want, you know, an entire source, lock it and send it there, and the entire source, you know, that way all of their traffic for an individual user goes this way, and then all, it's I guess it's not the most even balancing, but it does a really good job for the most part, and seems to kind of keep things straight inside the router.
Yeah, there's a lot of intervention there with it. You got to kind of, you know, keep an eye on it and say, okay, you know, as I'm adding users and subtracting users to certain towers, you know, you have to kind of go in and tweak it a little. I have some towers that have a, you know, they have a couple hundred customers on them, and I'm doing, you know, load balancing that way with the, you know, routing the source IP. I'm, you know, I've got, you know, 512 IPs broken down, where, you know, /26 goes out this IP just because there's real heavy customers on there. You know, the next, you know, /26 goes out another one, and I have to, you know, go in every now and then and tweak those based upon, you know, customer usage.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I think in those situations, you're always going to have to do that.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't think there is in the MikroTik, there is no silver bullet. You know, there's nothing.
ECMP, as far as I'm concerned, is junk.
What is?
ECMP, the equal cost multipath. You know, you just set the.
Yeah, ECMP actually, it's not the preferred method of load balance anymore because there was an update in the Linux kernel, and I think it was intended to help prevent DOS attacks. But what it does is. After about, like, it's a specific interval, it's like every 11 minutes or 12 minutes, there's a recalculation on the route table. So the ECMP, what it does is it basically runs a hash to determine where to send you, right? And it'll always send you, say, that this direction. Well, when it recalculates that hash at that 11 minutes or that 12 minutes, whatever it is, you may or may not magically switch to the other one for the next 11 or 12 minutes. So if you've got a session initiated right here and then it does that magic switch, it's going to brick your session. So it's definitely, unless it's just in your internal infrastructure and you're routing around multiple routers to reach your gateways, don't use ECMP. Like if you're trying to load balance on two internet gateways, don't use it. It's going to break things.
Yes, it does. I can confirm that.
There you go. And now you know.
Yeah, now I know why. It's like, oh, this is crap. Why does this break every day?
Ask the guys who make that crazy Linux thing.
Yeah, I was reading. Have you ever sat down and read through the change log on the kernel?
Dude, who has time other than you to sit and read change logs on the kernel?
It will put you to sleep. It is ridiculous. Ugh. I don't understand even what they're talking about.
You're ridiculous. This concept of having free time to do anything is amazing.
Yeah, what's free time?
Justin's got so much time, he can't even buy a PC. He's got to use his Mac. It's ridiculous. But yeah, so I guess that's kind of the few things that just like popped in my head, like how you could kind of work your way around. Everything's going to be kind of rigging it, you know. But you know what, the PCC thing, it seems like Microtik could probably, although they probably don't have the free time unless they hire JJ, to, you know, like put together kind of some little hidden package that's super crazy easy. It's just, you know, it's like IP, you know, ISP load balance, and then you can, you know, just adjust a couple of settings in there and just magically does everything, you know, like some kind of super best, you know, best algorithm script or something. And then one other thing that I've always wanted them to put in there, which I think would be crazy cool, is to put in a load balancer, like a real load balancer. Say you've, there's a Linux application that's been open source forever called Balance, I think, just that simple. And in there, super easy to set up. You just basically tell it the ports and then the servers back here, and then when stuff comes in, it'll load balance over to them, you know, and they could probably port that right in. And I'm not saying it's going to compete with F5, but a lot of your average Joes would love to be able to load balance to, say, some terminal servers or maybe some web servers, you know, like have it prefer to go to this web server, and if I happen to be updating it or I break it in some way, then it'll just, you know, automatically switch it over to this other one, you know, something cool like that.
Well, have you guys ever used any of the Peplink products?
I have.
I haven't. I mean, I've heard of them.
I mean, their software is pretty top-notch as far as a load balancer goes. I mean, they're kind of like what you were talking about, Greg. You know, they know, okay, I know what remote desktop protocol is. I know how to balance that across multiple WAN connections. You know, they've put in a lot of exceptions into it where it deals with stuff.
Is that the same company? Is Peplink, like Pepwave? That's all the same people, right?
I don't know about Pepwave. I know their websites, you know, Peplink, should be just peplink.com, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, I know all of those capabilities are in the Microtik. I mean, it's such a robust product, you know, and there's so many things it can already do. It's just, you know, if there were like super easy interfaces for those,
yeah,
you know, I think
that's
it would
the same
ridiculous.
People, the Pepwave people, and certainly didn't spend that time on radio products. So, but that's good to know that I kind of had a bad experience with their radio products. So,
well, I mean, they charge a premium for those little Peplinks, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a cheap solution. I mean, you're, you know, for a device that does, you know, 30 megabits of throughput, you know, it's $800-$900. You know, once you start getting into where you're needing hundreds of megs, you're, you know, you've really entered the high dollar arena there. So
to me, the Peplink seem like they're better for a company that wants to buy a bunch of business cable modems and crank all those guys together. If you're like a big ISP where you're pulling in large amounts of bandwidth from multiple providers, just peer with them via BGP, and you can easily manipulate that traffic with some prepending here and there and shuffle things pretty evenly.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't have to pay a premium. You just buy a couple of Microtiks and boom, you know, you're done.
Yep.
No $8,000 apparatus.
No. Or, I mean, you know, if you want redundancy, you put in one router or at least two routers, you know, one for each ISP, maybe load two and two, whatever. But you know, a lot of people just run it on one. You know, they'll just have one gateway and then you know, just do all the heavy lifting in there.
Yeah, my philosophy is a BGP router per peer. You know, makes upgrades easier. You know, it gives you some redundancy. If you want to get real crazy, you can, you know, VRRP them together and things like that. But, you know, you really don't need to.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you have one per peer, you know, you can take one peer down for maintenance or whatever. And yeah, no big deal.
Or you know what? If you're, say, your upstream provider decides they're going to take a crap and you know, their session starts flapping you and your CPU goes 100%, nobody's passing traffic on that, so if all your eggs are on that basket, you know, they're going to bring down your entire router. And I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen on 6500s, you know, with
that happened, 720s. That happened to Medion about 8 months ago, and it took them about 2 hours to get it straightened out.
And I've seen upstream providers mess up so bad that I had to shut the peer down because they were blackholing traffic. Wow. I mean, I've seen that happen. You know, it is what it is. You know, the internet's a best effort service, so you know, you got to be prepared. So all you can do is prepare as best you can on your side, and you know, hope that your upstream will do the same.
I have one client in Chicago. Their upstream is very, very, I mean, they're very bad about flapping. If the link flaps more than two times in an hour, they dampen it for an hour.
Whoa.
So, you know, that network has, you know, another peer just because of that. And it's a, you know, this is a major ISP up there with thousands and thousands of customers, and you know, that's their policy, and you like it or not.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen some people pull backup connections from other people, and, you know, they'll get like a 95th percentile-based billing. You know, that way they just don't send any traffic that way, so they pretty much don't get billed for it. But in the event that your main guy does take a siesta on you, you know, you can still route out to the internet. It might kind of cost you a lot, but well, I mean, with 95th percentile, though, you can usually burst for about a day and a half, and that gets thrown in the trash. So as long as your main ISP doesn't go down for more than a day and a half, you'll never really get billed for that.
True.
Do any of you guys, kind of off topic, know of a mini PCI solution for Verizon LTE that will work with MikroTik?
I haven't tried to do it.
Can you get a... well, it's not mini PCI, though. You're wanting mini PCI, aren't you?
Well, I guess I could run something with a USB port. So I just need a solution, I guess.
I've seen guys do USB, you know, Verizon dongles.
Yeah.
I was, you know, hitting up Google on this, and this company Alpha. It's so funny. They got, you know, I've got a couple products from them, but now they're making all these Ubiquiti lookalike products. So funny. check out our nanostation, but it's not a nanostation. It's so funny. Everybody, as I've seen like three or four, I guess, everybody's just
trying to
get a piece of that.
Well, and I don't know if Greg's followed this. One of the, you know, the rumors now is Ubiquiti sent the Chinese mafia after some of these counterfeiters.
Really?
Yeah, they actually, you know, the rumor is that they hired some muscle to go in and, you know, hey, you guys are counterfeiting our stuff. We're here to shut you down.
But their kind of non-official response to that was, you know, that the counterfeiters are putting that information out there to try to hurt them as a company.
So. Would you cop to it, though? Hey, man, I just hired the mafia to go after.
No, you would. But that also sounds like something another company might do after another company IPOs just to get some bad press out there.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I could see both sides of it.
I mean, I think that's why Facebook stock tanked, right? MySpace? Set out a bunch of rumors, is that what it was?
Who's MySpace?
So I saw somebody post stuff the other day that said, if I go back far enough on my Facebook timeline, does it turn into MySpace? That's got to hurt.
Maybe it was Pinterest or Groupon.
I'm still waiting for someone to interview Tom from MySpace.
Was that the last guy on MySpace? Is that his name, Tom? That one guy that's still on there?
The one guy that's still left. Wasn't Tom like your default friend? You know, even if you had no friends on MySpace, Tom was your friend.
Yeah, he was. Didn't he start the website? Yeah.
I have no idea. I never actually used MySpace. My first foray was into Facebook. I was a holdout. I tried to hold out as long as I could. I actually still know people who don't use Facebook, which seems so odd to me.
Yeah, like Sam, he refuses. He just absolutely will not.
Is he afraid he won't have enough friends? I'll friend him. Tell him I'll friend him. Come on.
What is it? He calls it my face space.
My face space. He's not on friend face. He's not on jitter.
No. He was talking about LinkedIn tonight. He was talking about how he knew, you know, a good number of people on LinkedIn, and he was asking me how that one worked. He's like,
LinkedIn is
like,
an old man's Facebook. That's what that is. That's your grandpa's Facebook. It's ridiculous.
So I was like, maybe that's a good place for you to start. So
it's kind of easy. Put his feet in the pool, then he can just kind of slowly wade in.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Sounds like a solid plan.
But I need a solution for 4G. I got some guys out in the woods that they got a T1 that flaps about 3 times a day, and I've got 4G where I on the entrance of the property, so I have to use a high gain. And standing on, you know, at the highest point of the property, I can get it on my phone ever so slightly. So, I think with a high gain antenna and the proper application of them, I can make it work for them. So.
Yeah, Microchip actually has their supported hardware list. It's actually been updated. They have a 4G LTE card. It's a USB card. It says it's a Bandrich C501. It must be the chipset or something. Mm. It's tested with version 5.12. So, you know, you could do some search on that. Maybe it'll come up with something, but I was actually kind of surprised when I popped on there. They haven't updated this for quite a while, but now I see some. Yeah, there's 5.9 and higher. They've updated this recently. 5.15.
Good.
I know for a while they were pretty much saying, you know, if you get a 3G card or the like and it doesn't work, then just send us the output. And we'll, you know, write you some drivers or something.
Very cool. Some
connection strings. So they've been pretty good about it as far as I know.
Yeah, I need to, I got to put something together to get this working. It's funny, they got fiber pulled all over the campus. And they're going to have their WAN is going to be, right now, 51. So it's going to be a 4G connection that fails over to the T1. And that's another note. You know, let's say they get a tiered service that they only get like 5 gigs a month. I guess I should talk to Andrew about this. It's like a little script that says, okay, 5 gigs on this WAN and then switch over. In this, you know, billing cycle. So, in the event that they went over. I don't know. What do you think?
That'd be easy to do with. If it was a triple PoE connection.
But, yeah, I was going to say, PPPoE actually keeps track of how much throughput.
But, you know, if it's just a strict handoff connection, that complicates it a little.
Maybe you could graph the traffic from the interface, you know, because it does that internal graphing. You could store that, and maybe you could look at that.
Can you look at that mechanism could you look at that?
I've never attempted it, but you might be able to access that information. If not, you could offload NetFlow information, but then it would have to be collected on something internal to keep track of that. Or what else could you do? You could say Monday enable WAN 1 and then Tuesday enable WAN 2 and then just back and forth depending on what day of the week it was. Or say it's an odd day of the month, then WAN 1 is enabled. If it's an even day, WAN 2 is enabled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So it might be good on Monday and then terrible on Tuesday. It's like, nobody comes to work on Tuesday anymore.
Well, I don't know. The cards are right next to each other. I can't imagine it being terrible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Something to think about. They should be.
I see what you're saying. Just two separate 4G cards. Or two separate.
Two 4G cards, and you just enable one today and then the next one tomorrow and then the following. So just back and forth.
Yeah.
Speaking of USB stuff. Speaking of USB stuff, Greg, have you done any more with USB storage on any of the MikroTik stuff?
I haven't recently. They've done several revisions, so I'm willing to bet they sped it up. I noticed on x86 with the USB connection, if I stream video using VLC, it actually goes. It'll work. If you try and use Internet Explorer tries to like cache like the entire thing like immediately, and it just kills the MikroTiks. But like VLC just streams it at a nice slow even rate, just the rate necessary to stream the video smoothly. So it works pretty well. And I did test it on an x86 base, and it seemed to work significantly better because I started out trying it on a 751, I think, and that's when the Microsoft Media Center or whatever was murdering the router. It was just pegging out the CPU, and just the router couldn't do anything. It was just killing it.
Okay.
So I more blame the software, but I don't know. I just, for like really streaming video, I don't know that it's got enough pep to really keep up. Although, I mean, maybe they've streamlined it, optimized it. I think I remember seeing something in the change logs about SMB at some point.
Yeah, it's just curious. I haven't done anything with it. I don't have much, you know, use for it. I have a network attached storage, so
yeah,
you know, that does me.
So does this little modem, this little USB gadget, this 4G job here, does it have a external antenna put on it, or am I going to have to smash it open?
I'm guessing it doesn't have an external antenna. Being 4G, I haven't seen very many, you know, quote, high-powered 4G devices.
Look here, external antenna port, what is it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, overview, that's probably a good place to look. Huh?
Never hurts. Alright guys, so we're approaching an hour on this thing, and it murders my machine to process these videos with this VOD burner application. Took me forever last time. So I think an hour is probably about as much as this thing can handle. It's going to take me probably 3 days to get this stupid thing to process.
Maybe we should send you a good computer.
No, I don't think it's the application that's just subpar. The very first one I did, I used my screen recording stuff that I like always use for everything, and it worked like a champ. But I didn't have the ability to really kind of get the audio the way I wanted to. You know, it didn't really work out. Maybe if I can figure out how to get both sides of the audio properly, I could go with that. But this VodBurner thing like ties straight into Skype, and it kind of pulls the individual feeds and the audio, and you can kind of chop it up. And it supposedly works well, but it's pretty crappy.
Well, hopefully next time Andrew will be recovered from his Diablo 3 adventures.
That's so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
I can't hate on it. I've got to spend very little time with it, but it's my understanding he put in 10 hours of first day.
I talked to him yesterday, and it was a few hours short of a week for the official release, and he had 67 hours logged.
I got like four.
Kid's got a problem. So I'm just going to run through my blog really quick and point out some stuff that I saw recently. One is the mini speed test from speedtest.net. Justin had some great input on that. It's that they kind of expire it, so when a new version comes out, they kind of, I guess, disable the client. You got to go download the new one. But, man, it's terrific to run internally. And I was thinking back at the MUM in Phoenix, we had this joke at the table that,
right,
you know, redirects people to a fake speed test, and so I actually made one. But this would be perfect if you hijack people trying to go to speedtest.net and just send them to your internal, and you could say, man, look, your speed's looking great, brother.
Yep.
So that would be a good one for that.
Maybe you can just post it at each tower.
The IP is 127.0.0.1, and it just runs right off their local machine. Perfect. So then MikroTik on routerboard.com put up the RB2011LS-IN, which is basically the little 2011 that's got the 5 gig, 5100 ports, and then it's got an SFP port, which looks to be cool. It looks like most people want to use them as media converters, which, hey, man. If it works, it works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about that.
Converter.
And then,
it's a media converter with SNMP. I mean,
yeah.
I wonder if you'll be able to do any attenuation analysis.
Oh, to look at the light levels and stuff on the outputs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea.
That would be awesome.
And then let's see. Not too long ago, a customer I was working with. I wanted to test replication between some stand and some application performance between multiple sites, and I found this cool set of programs. One is WAN-Bridge, one is WAN-EM. WAN-Bridge is a NOPX-based ISO. You throw it in a machine, it boots up, it finds all the NICs, puts them on a bridge, and then you can selectively put a delay on there. So it was perfect. So if you want 50 milliseconds of delay on anything moving through this, you just go on there, type custom, 50, enter, and boom. You can even put in loss and something else on that one. But the really cool one I found was WAN-EM, and it's got tons of features out there. I think not only can you do a delay, but you can put in jitter, duplication, packet reordering, corruption, random disconnects. I mean, you can basically terrorize traffic using this thing.
Nice.
This was inspired to terrorize Diablo 3 subscribers.
I couldn't help but think how, like, on opening day, if I was to do that for everybody in our apartment complexes, you know, like all 20,000 students, all of a sudden, think about that. Everybody had 300 milliseconds of delay all of a sudden, and like, it's like 5% packet loss. It would be insane, dude. Those guys would be so pissed. Although, apparently, due to service, they wouldn't have noticed anyway. I mean, they would have had the equal experience.
The errors in the terrible launch.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But yeah, I mean, I don't think those things ever go perfectly.
I just don't understand how a company with that much experience doing that type of thing can. I think maybe they just don't buy enough infrastructure on day one. But why don't they just call up Amazon and say, "Okay, Amazon, we need some EC2 for a week, you know, or whatever. Just leverage some cloud horsepower to handle
the traffic." But who's to say it was a lack of horsepower and maybe just like, well, I mean, because they had bugs. They obviously had bugs. There was something like if you had somebody, you know, like your companion and you equipped a shield to the specific type of companion, it would basically break, you know, like your session would lock up and you wouldn't be able to log back in. So they had bugs. I mean, it could have been. Could have been a bug on their side, too, causing all those problems. Let's see. What else? Just recently, they released 5.16. A couple of fixes. I don't know. Nothing too insane since the last time we talked, I guess.
Everybody needs to buy a Cheese Whiz handle from Greg.
Butter knife with a Cheese Whiz handle.
For sure.
Yeah, and then I put up a little link about the fiber fingers, the skinny fingers, and people kept complaining about the fact that they're $60. They seem to forget that I didn't pay for these. The company freaking paid for them. And It's when you got big fat man sausage fingers and you're trying to get in there and pull out LCs out of, you know, an LIU that's just packed full of them. It's impossible.
Yeah, it really is. I've sweated many late nights trying to do that, especially if the LIU's at the top of the rack and you're standing on the ladder and everything else.
It's a pain in the butt. It's just not worth all the heartache. And I guess, man, that's pretty much it. Hopefully we can get together again next week and get this going regularly again. Maybe
cool.
Kind of a standing one every Tuesday or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I would love that. I also hope I have some interesting news next week.
That you can actually talk about.
Yeah, probably not. I'll probably hear on this. Depressing.
All right, JJ. So what are your closing arguments? What do you got?
Closing arguments. We don't have much. I don't have anything, I guess. We went over security. We went over the bonding for 3G connections or whatever. And I don't really have anything in closing other than don't got nothing.
Inspiring.
Inspiring.
All right, Justin, what do you have?
I just want to remind anybody out there, you know, keep the questions coming on the blog and everything, and you know, let us know what you want us to talk about, because you know we need your help.
One thing I was kind of kicking around would be to do this on Skype, but also to stream it maybe live, like on Ustream or Justin.tv, and give people the option to actually ask us questions live.
That would really be nice. Like that guy you're always watching that plays the video games.
Oh, yeah, dude. I watch people all the time playing video games. I don't know what you're talking about. But I don't watch them for the video games. I usually don't even have it up on screen. I just listen to them talk and say idiotic things. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
What is that one guy that does that all the time?
But you know what? I'm not ashamed to say it. There's a guy called Chess Network, and he streams chess. He plays chess. But there's something undeniable about watching this guy play chess. My wife can't stand it. This guy, it's like, you know, watching anybody that's just amazing at what they do and they're doing it, you know? You know, it's pretty cool. Like when you see those videos of the Indian guys, like, putting shoes in the box, you know, he's like flipping around, just bam, just catching them. So it's like, yeah, it could be mundane, but if you're awesome at it, I want to watch you.
Yeah.
And this guy's just awesome, man. But yeah, I was thinking about maybe a live stream. The only downside is that it might be humiliating and nobody show up. And so we don't have any interaction or any questions. And it's just, you know, we just have to pretend like we're not doing it.
We can get our mothers and people that really care about us to log in, and we'll just feed them seed questions.
We'll make some fake accounts, and then I'll just have some questions queued up that I'll fire off. But yeah. So other than that, I don't really have anything. Yeah, just keep the questions coming. Really like to say thank you to JJ and Justin, some of the sharpest guys out there. Definitely hit them up if you guys want some real consultants. If you want just some guy that's, you know, kind of give me a holler.
Don't sell yourself short.
Oh no, I'm like 6'3". I'm pretty tall. So let's see, and then Andrew, Diablo 3 over us.
Scripting.
I'm just saying, you chose Diablo 3 over your friends. pretty ridiculous. So I'm actually going to get off because I got a change window tonight. I'm swapping out a DNS server tonight. So thank you guys. Thanks everybody. Send us some questions. Late, guys.
Sounds good.
Yes.